What is God doing right now?
If God is everywhere, why can't I see him anywhere?
Where is God?
Where is God?
Why is there so much suffering?
Why does God let this happen?
Why won't God answer my prayers?
Who's going to heaven?
How come? Why?
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 What's the point?
What for?
Now it's time for some straight answers to awkward questions with Pastor George Samianch.
What happens to our family members who don't go to church? Hello, my name is George Samietz and you're listening to Straight Answers to Awkward Questions on Lutheran Radio UK. Today's question is my summary of what has come into Lutheran Radio UK for me to answer. And when I asked Pastor Jamie Krieger, Lutheran Radio UK's manager, whether he had any more details, he just smiled and shook his head. He had sent me two things. One was a question and the other a sentence. But they both talked about families where some members are not active in the faith, while other family members are active. The question was, will spouses who never come to church be saved? The statement was, I just come to church to support my spouse, but I don't believe. So I've put them together as, what happens to our family members who don't go to church? The situation of Christian families having family members not Christian is not unknown. Of course, it isn't what Christians want, but it is reality for many families today. I've no way of knowing really what percentage of congregational families would regard themselves as in this situation. Whether it is a growing percentage today, my gut says that it is, but it has been part of church life since the beginning of the early church. In 1 Corinthians chapter 7, the Apostle Paul gives advice to Christians whose spouses were not followers of Jesus, calling the Christian spouse to stay in the marriage. Separation and divorce, because one's spouse hadn't come to faith, was not the course of action to take. Instead, they were called to serve their spouse in the marriage while maintaining the priority of following Jesus, and I'm sure that presented challenges at times, as it does today. Nevertheless, the apostle counseled, if the non-Christian spouse wanted to leave and divorce, then let it be so. Paul wants peace between them, whether together or separated, and the goal for the Christian spouse remains one of acting in ways so that the non-believing spouse may eventually be saved. Salvation is not something one can do for another. A husband cannot believe for his wife and vice versa. Salvation doesn't come about because of proximity or osmosis. Salvation isn't something we achieve by our deeds, even by going to church regularly. Salvation is that gracious gift of God given through faith because of the suffering and death of Jesus. Salvation relates to one's relationship to Jesus, to God. Many people might say that they believe in God, but the questions to ask are, which God, and what is his name? So we're looking for a relationship of some sort rather than knowledge. For faith is more than knowledge about him, though knowledge of him is a good start, and involves trust in him. Now we should be careful not to assume just because someone says he or she believes means that they do. Or the opposite, that if they say they don't believe, that they actually don't. And this is especially so if they regularly attend worship with their Christian spouse. By placing themselves in worship, they are placing themselves into the presence of God, who is not inactive, but by the power of the Holy Spirit is calling them, enlightening them, and sanctifying them through word and blessing. Spouses who have sat in the pews for years and years, who've watched their spouses go forward for Holy Communion, are also in God's presence weekly, and the Holy Spirit doesn't sit on his hands and ignore them. I'm not saying that their attendance at church equals salvation, but seriously, they can't be in a better place for this event to occur, and faith can be given and nurtured and grown, almost beyond the person's awareness. Nevertheless, we do listen to what people say, and if someone tells us that they don't believe in Jesus, then of course we accept that as our starting point and treat that statement as the description of what is going on spiritually in them while not dismissing what God is doing, especially if they are baptized. You see, we can't ignore what God has done in a person's life and where he has acted in baptism. Then we're not dealing with a non-Christian who needs to come to faith, but with a prodigal who needs to return home. As God treats us individually, so the church treats everyone as sinners who need to live by grace alone. And this perhaps applies most particularly for non-Christian spouses who get to see Christianity up close, even intimately, as they see it reflected in their spouse. That's why Paul's advice is sound, about there being peace between the married couple, and that is certainly what the Christian spouse seeks. This is not peace at all costs. This is peace within boundaries, parameters. We're not talking about peace because one spouse has merged into the identity of the other. That's not healthy over any topic or situation in a marriage. Marriage is about two different people becoming one, creating a new one from them both. Children are a good example of this. But in terms of the relationship between them, it's a new one. And they hopefully haven't, or shouldn't, just created a bigger version of one spouse. Marriage is about working together as two complementing each other. So the Christian spouse remains Christian and follows Jesus, and the non-Christian spouse remains that. Of course, hopefully not. But the cards are on the table, so to speak, that the love of the Christian spouse is not tied to whether the other believes or not. Both spouses must be true to themselves and find their own way of working together on issues. Most practically, it's about Sunday morning and what to do with the children. Paul's advice to let the non-Christian spouse leave shows what love is capable of doing, sacrificing, even letting them go if they wish. The point here is that love is action more than feeling and has parameters and a priority for the Christian spouse, and that is Jesus. No Christian spouse really wants to have to make a choice between Jesus or their husband or wife. Not really. They want to follow Jesus in their marriage. And in the early church, that meant possibly a peaceful separation. Today, however, this can often be translated almost as the Christian spouse having to give in to the non-Christian spouse. But that isn't healthy. If the non-Christian spouse does things that creates choice, me or Jesus almost, then the non-Christian spouse will realize at some point that you can't take Jesus out of their Christian spouse. Jesus is part of why they love them, and that faith is an intrinsic part of their Christian spouse, which will lead the Christian spouse to say no at some point and follow Jesus. The practicalities of marriages are always complex, and where there are different faiths involved, even more so. But Christians are called to live in peace as far as they are able, so that they can love and serve their non-Christian husband or wife and be a reflection of Jesus for them. What happens to our family members who don't go to church? They are loved by God and by us who are Christian, so that they may also discover that following Jesus is the best way to live after all. If you'd like some straight answers, send your awkward questions to me, George Samyets, at Lutheran Radio UK. That is at info@lutheranradio.co.uk. Goodbye.